welcome to Monday night's conference call. Please state your name and location when you get a chance.
Uncle Terry,
this is Marilyn.
Hi, Marilyn.
Hi.
Uncle Terry,
Hi,
I need
Carola.
Your phone number.
Your book, Uncle Terry.
Yes.
Wonderful,
what
thank
about
you.
It? Did you read it?
I'm on chapter 7.
Uh-huh.
I'm really enjoying it.
Good evening. Welcome to Monday's conference call. Please state your name and location when you get a chance.
Robert from Glendora.
Hello, Robert. Welcome.
Thank you.
Hi, Robert.
Hello.
Yeah.
Good evening. Welcome to Monday night's conference call. Please state your name and location.
Hi, Cleo from Connecticut. How are you?
Good, Cleo. How are you?
Great. Thank you.
Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Now, Marilyn, when we were talking like we were with Don before and all those people were coming in, and then after we stopped, you said, would you like to say your name and your city, right?
Right.
Now, I'll tell you what I would have done, since you know there's like six people there, say anyone on the East Coast that wants to say their name and their city. Anyone on the West
North
Coast?
Carolina.
There we go, Percy. Percy, North Carolina. Anyone, any males? Any females? That way you don't get everybody talking at once.
Okay. How about the West Coast? Anybody want to say their name and location on the West Coast? Nope.
Hi.
They don't want to talk.
Oh, we have Terry.
That's
Aunt Terry.
Auntie Terry.
Yeah. And Auntie Terry and Uncle Terry.
Carolyn,
now I hear the echo.
I hear Carolyn and Okotoke.
It's me.
Hi, Carolyn.
Wanda in Saskatchewan.
How are you doing?
Wanda.
Now, Wanda and Carolyn know each
other. Miranda.
Wait a second.
Who's got their echo? Can you make that speaker on?
That's what I get for talking about echoes. That's what I get for talking about echoes. I see Rosalie and Clark. Is that Clark in Ohio?
Oh.
I'm going to mute
the
line. Too much noise. And is Terry here? Terry's here, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Still excellent.
The lady in Saskatchewan, are you on your speakerphone?
Too late. Too echo.
All callers are muted and they can unmute themselves.
Okay. Terry's. Now, wait a second. Now I got to get rid of all those things. Hang on a second. I don't know how to do it. I don't remember how to do that.
Not muted.
I know. All right. No more dings. I said blah, blah, blah. Who was singing on the line? You're supposed to be muted. All right. Hang on. We're starting our recording.
This conference is being recorded.
This is June 2nd, 2014, and we have Wynn and Terry Brown in Sedona. We have Terry Friedman visiting with us tonight in Phoenix. Terry Friedman, are you there?
Yes.
Hey, listen.
Hi, Terry.
Can I ask you anything?
Me?
Yeah. Is there anything that I shouldn't ask you?
No, you can ask.
I want to ask you a controversial question.
All right. I'll do.
Are you ready for that?
I'll do my best, Wynn.
I was doing some research on Matthew, and somebody had a web page up about how Matthew was helping Jesus make sure that he fulfilled all the prophecies. In other words, they were kind of juggling things. Do you remember that?
To some degree, actually. Jesus was very much in command, and his uncle really was paying more attention to that than Matthew. Matthew was learning. But, very, very little bit of that. Mainly, Matthew was involved with pinching the pennies and see that the money would take them where they needed to go. That was his.
Sure.
He was a financier. He had watched the payments, the money, and everything. And he was a scribe also. That
right.
was the primary function of Matthew.
I mean, Matthew was a tax collector before he ran off with Jesus, right?
He knew. He was very educated. He knew a lot about, watching the financial, the abundance and how that should go. And he just spread it out. He's very tight with the money, So.
Mm-hmm. He was tight with the money, right?
Oh, yeah. Plus, he was a scribe. So that was his primary function.
He was like the most quoted of all the scribes, was he not?
Well, he was, but he was the most educated.
And the most educated of all the scribes, right.
He was educated partially in Rome.
Yeah. Okay. Hey, I have good news for everybody, and that is that I managed to find a PDF of Terry's book, The Man Who Walked with Jesus, and we're working out how we can put that out so we can make it available really cheaply so everybody can afford it, And we still do have signed copies of the book. I didn't put it on today's email, but go back to one of the past emails, and it was kind of running at the bottom of all the emails. And the website is manwhowalked.intelligent-infinity.com. manwhowalked.intelligent-infinity.com. And right now, we have signed copies. And I don't know how long that's going to last, because it took a lot of elbow twisting to get Terry to sign the books because of his MS. His body doesn't work that well, and it's hard for him to get the, how would you say it?
Hard for me to get the writing hand going.
So, these are collectibles, as well as being inspirationals. The Man Who Walked with Jesus. And you don't have to believe anything. I don't believe anything. We don't even have to believe we're talking to the Elohim until you get some resonance that they're paying attention to you. And same thing with The Man Who Walked with Matthew. We did two or three shows with Terry. The Man Who Walked with Jesus, right. Well, Jesus also walked with Matthew, but that would be a different book, I guess, right? Thank you. Thank you for correcting me. And well, I'm sure we'll have some more talks in the future about this. And I am so honored to have Terry checking in on our line. And I hope our sources will pay attention to him for any healing that they can do. And as I sent out today, I read a very controversial article. It was even controversial for me last week. And yet, I thought there was some truth in it. And having come from identifying with the New Age, identifying with the idea that love is so important and care is, and we have to take care of each other. And watching that for a long time, even before I started doing this work or writing the Wilcock book, I started to see a pattern. And I'm not judging this pattern. I'm just pointing it out that so many people would come on the scene and have something of validity to offer, and then before you know it, it was all business. And it was all about selling books or booking appointments or doing workshops. And in some way, none of those things, nothing's wrong with doing all those things, because I sell books, I do workshops, and of course, we bring through channeled sources. But what it seemed to me was people were making the money and the raising of money more important than the service. Now, there's got to be a compromise, obviously, because you have to make money to support yourself, to support this work. You know, we pay a lot of money out. We pay BBS $500 a month so we can broadcast these shows. And we pay for our email service. And that's nothing to say for the fact that Terry and I are operating this whole thing with a lot of volunteers. Because if it wasn't for the volunteers, there's no way we could come close to doing this. And we still have to pay for a roof over our heads. And, you know, thank goodness there's people that either have enough extra time or have good jobs or are retired that have chosen to help and to put web pages up and to do transcripts and all of that stuff. And so, you know, money is part of, you know, you can't disregard money. And that's why we started selling pendants, because I said, well, you know what, I'm really good. I can be good at business, and that can be a business that I can use my business acumen in, and it could support our work and, you know, even make a lot of money. It hasn't done that yet, but at least it's supporting our work, and it's, you know, keeping a lot of pressure off, and it's allowing Terry to pay her mortgage and to have this house we're in Sedona. And then I want to acknowledge all the people that are sending donations in, which are really, really helping and appreciated. And any of you feel like you want to do that, go to donations.intelligent-infinity.com. And if you make a donation and put your love into it, it's a way of connecting. It's a way of completing the circuit. And it's a way of expressing gratitude back. So it's not just losing something. If you do it with the right energy, it's giving as well as, you know, giving on a higher level. So in any case, that being said, it's like we have what's called the New Age, and we have loads of channelers everywhere. They're very predominant now. And we have people believing that at some point spacemen are going to land and save us. Jesus is going to come back and save us. Somebody's going to come back and save us. The whole planet is going to transition, and everyone's going to go to another dimension. And I happen to not believe any of those things. When I was first writing The Reincarnation of Edgar Cayce, the Ra Group said that this is the time for the birth of the Christ energy, the Christ consciousness, the birth of the Christ in each person. And that they said that Jesus was not going to come back. And they said,
if he came back, if he actually came back, then how would people know who he was? People would fight over him, okay? And there wasn't a good way to bring him back. And then I was reading all this stuff about how what we call the negative goes into other dimensions, and they had a plan to bring holograms, to project holograms of Jesus into the sky so that they could control people thinking Jesus was coming back. And they're actually, if you go on YouTube, you'll see people looking at different holograms or cloud formations or this or that or signs or statues that are crying. And I'm not sure, but I would suggest the possibility that some of these things are of the negative. Even Fatima, those prophecies that came from Fatima. Now, I may be wrong, I may not be wrong, but the point is, whether I'm right or wrong, anything that you can't directly validate for sure, anything that looks like a sign that's trying to make you follow something or do something, just be wary of. Say, okay, I'll consider that that might be legitimate, that might be real, that might be Jesus making that cloud formation in the sky, or God, or whoever, but it might not be. And so see what it wants you to do, if anything. Otherwise, you can look at it and say, that's a nice cloud formation. And leave it at that. Yeah?
Well, Yeshua told me that he wasn't going to come back and straighten up the mess. He said, man made it, man's got to straighten it up himself. He's not going to come back and straighten it up. Part of the reason being there is...
I don't think he could if he wanted to, right?
He could. He doesn't want to.
He doesn't want to.
Show you how to birth the Christ within each of us. That was his purpose for coming. Not to clean up our mess here. That's not where he's at. He doesn't want to do that. And he told me he will not do that. So, there you go.
If somebody straightens it out, did you ever notice if you hire somebody to clean your kitchen, which we should do, then a week later it's dirty again and you need to hire them again? And when you learn to clean your own, it's not wrong to hire somebody to clean your kitchen. This is different, not the best analogy. But the bottom line is, if somebody comes and fixes your life, and it's like a temporary fix, because the patterns that created it are going to come right back again, and your life's going to get messed up. So you have to straighten your own life out. You can learn from other people. You can get wisdom from other people. You can learn to feel energies from higher dimensions. But ultimately, every one of us is responsible for our own life. And if we were not that way, if it wasn't that way, we would then be slaves. Because whoever took responsibility for your life then owned you. You realize that? Even if they didn't want to, they let you be responsible for them. It's kind of like, did you ever give money to somebody and then they came back and they needed more money, and then they needed more money, and then they started kissing up to you because you're giving them money, and if you stop giving them money, they get mad at you. So by enabling somebody, that's the psychological word, enabling means helping someone when they should be learning their own lesson. It takes a lot of wisdom to be able to truly know how to give to somebody without enabling them. And it's okay if you make a mistake. You know that? So what? So you enable somebody, when you catch it, you say, I'm not going to do it. And then they'll get mad at you, and you'll say, okay, I knew that was going to happen, but at least you're learning. And it's better to do things and make mistakes than not do anything. But the key is to, in the ultimate level, is to be able to help people without enabling them. And, you know, if you truly do that, their life will change and they won't need you anymore. And they may still come back. Some of you have been on these calls, and you don't need to come to these calls, but you come back because it's a support system. Some of you calls, you need them more. But am I enabling you? No, I'm not. I'm creating a beacon, a lighthouse that is just there, a point of stability in this crazy world so that it's accessible to you. And you can know it's there, and it gives you, I think it gives people the opportunity to grow because something's holding for them. But there's no control pattern here. There's no agenda. There's no manipulation. And you know, as you see how it works, it helps you to evaluate other people and what they're doing. I'm sure there's other people that do what I do, and then there's a lot more that don't, and that what they do is they hold carrots up, and they say, you know, you can become enlightened, but the workshop is this weekend, and it's $300, and you start thinking, oh, my God, I better do that $300 workshop, and if you don't have the money, it's too bad for you. Now, that is a manipulation. That's saying you need to spend all this money to become enlightened. Now, is that wrong or right? I don't know. You decide. But this whole idea of this article that I read, which was from a guy by the name of Cameron Day. Let's see if I find the article here. I brought it up. Just this second. It always seems open on the internet.
I want to thank Uncle Terry for his contribution. I think that was a really good contribution there about Yahshua.
Yes, it was. Thank you, Jerry.
Clean up everybody else's mess.
All right, now. Is this the here's the article. Okay, just to key you into this article that I read, I'm not going to read the whole thing, just read a couple things, so in case you weren't here last week, this is this fellow, Cameron Day. I think it's a guy. I think so. Cameron might not be, but I think it's a guy who was talking about that basically the lower levels of the universe are involved in duality. And so in duality, you have the good guys and the bad guys. You have the service to self guys and the service to other guys. And a lot of light worker, people would identify being light workers, would identify with the service to other guys. And then he is making the point that there is a convergence of both the positive and the negative in the lower realms. Convergence in the sense that there was another way of looking at it. Now I'm going to mix what I say with what he says, and that is there are beings that need energy from other beings. And those beings are on both sides of the duality. They are on the light side and the dark side. And on the light side, they get energy by being your God figure, by being your leader, and you end up giving them energy. And on the dark side, they end up getting energy by sneaking in, taking it, stealing it, occupying you, ripping off your energy field and even abducting you, okay? Well, obviously the light side is a lot more gentle, but it can also be more deceptive, because if you're going to go for the greatest growth in your life, you've got to rise above the duality. Now, here's the way, this guy wrote this article on August 23rd, and he says, I'm just reading him. No, I haven't turned to the dark side, but rather I am transcending sides. This article is probably the most important piece I have written to date. And planet Earth and much of our corner of the universe has been under a spell for a very long time, a spell which casts doubt within our minds about whether or not we are connected with the infinite source of all creation. The spell causes us to feel alone, vulnerable, and isolated, cast out from the heavenly realms into a cruel dog-eat-dog world. And this spell is pure fiction, a deception of the highest order, but it's taken hold deeply on this and other worlds. Okay? And then he goes and talks about dark versus false light. And then he talks about the demi-urge. And the demi-urge is a Gnostic word which has to do with what we would call the negative intelligence at the top of the negativity. And the idea is that there are one or a group of negative guys at the very top, and everything else falls under them, including the light. And so the question is, there are various names of various beings, and he's making the case that some of these beings that we would identify as positive, that we would think as that from hearing of them, are not necessarily positive, but they're part of looking like positive and holding energy underneath them, manipulating light energy towards them, and then holding it in position. Now, I thought about that this week, and I said, I think there might be more to the understanding here. And I wanted to add that this week to clarify that, because I read that last week and I didn't say anything about it, because some of the beings in that, positive-looking, negative part of the universe might be beings that you have looked up to, or I have looked up to. And, for example, this guy would identify Archangel Michael in that group. He would identify Saint Germain in that group. He would identify Jehovah in that group, and a host of other ascended masters and various other channel entities. Now, I was like zooming out and looking at the universe, and I said, is this the final say, what he's saying? And I said to myself, no, there's more to it. There's things which he is not covering. And I would say, depending on who's being exposed to this idea, it would be more important for certain people than other people. I'll give you an example. Let's consider the idea that there is a space in the universe that's above duality, above light and dark. And if you've ever looked at the yin-yang symbol, the yin-yang symbol represents duality. It's, you know, the two little things in that circle, but the two together resolve duality. Now, this is a mental concept, resolving duality. But what does it really mean? What does it mean to resolve duality? Well, before I answer that question, let's go back and look at how this works in a practical way. One thing that I am sure of is that there are multitudes of beings in this realm that came in from high dimensions. And they came in to be of service. And many of you could be some of those beings. But there's hundreds of millions of them. And apparently, the way it looks on the other side is when you're looking at this realm, you're thinking, I'm going to go down there and kick some, I won't say the word. Terry doesn't like me to say those words. Kick some A. No, I mean Terry Friedman. I'm going to go down there and kick some A. And it looks easy from the other side. I'm going to go down there. I'm going to help save that planet. And then we all came down here, and we got through these lifetimes, and we can't figure out what we're doing here. Nothing is working, but we're not ending up kicking any A. In fact, we're usually being kicked and saying, what am I doing here? I don't deserve that. And that is what almost always happens, okay? And those people that came from beyond duality to start with can get easily caught in lower levels of teachings or leaders or masters, and they're actually higher than the masters that they're paying attention to. But they never realize that because they don't know how to do anything, and those other guys do. And so the person that's doing always gets the attention. So, for example, Archangel Michael might fall into that category. And if you happen to be a being that's come from a very high level, beyond duality, then you'd have to compress yourself to be under the auspices of Archangel Michael. And if you do that, then you're limiting your growth. Now, if, and that goes not only for Archangel Michael, it could even be for Beelzebub or Lucifer or who knows what, whatever you're following, even a negative thing, but it still comes from a very high level, from beyond duality, and that almost all teachings would compress you because your ultimate natural place is higher than those teachings. And then there are other people that those particular teachings would be very important because they did not come from such a high place. This is where I felt the article didn't make this point. It made it look like these teachers, like people like Saint Germain and Archangel Michael were not good. And I don't think they're necessarily not good. I don't know enough to say whether they are or they aren't. But I wouldn't condemn them just because there's a bigger universe than them. I would say for a good portion of the planet, people are not ready for beyond duality. They're not ready. You can hear it as an idea, you can hear it as a mental construct, but can you live it? Can you live in that zone of being beyond duality? No. You have to go through all of these levels. And I think the Ra Group fairly well describes those levels in their six steps up the levels. And the Ra Group has said themselves that they volunteered to hang into this space because they were needed. They were going to be here to hold energy for those that would reach for them that they could help. And of course, one of the things that I have come to, we have Terry, Uncle Terry on the line, so he hasn't come to this yet, and I'm saying this, but he doesn't have to believe it. He, you know, over time, usually if over time if something's true, it'll stick. But the Ra group, Jesus was very much affiliated with the Ra group. And when I asked the question directly to DK some years ago, when Jesus said, "Father, who answered?" The answer was, as you would know it, the Ra group. And then we have this idea that Edgar Cayce was channeling the Ra group. Now, he never said that. He never knew he was channeling a group soul. And Edgar Cayce said, "I believe my source is the Christ." And of course, he came from a fundamentalist religious background, and that worked for him. And of course, sometimes they would sound biblical. And then the same source talking through David Wilcock. But if you read the book, sometimes that source would sound biblical. So now, putting all these pieces together, no one else has done this. In fact, when I was on Alfred Weber's interview last week, which I haven't sent out, but if you look up Alfred Weber, W-E-B-R-E, Winfrey, it's on YouTube, and he's never had anyone on for as long as we were on for over 2 hours, and he was spellbound by the things we were sharing, and this guy is sharp. He's a PhD. He's dedicated. He interviews people of service, and you can go read on the YouTube all the great comments people were making who were just discovering us on this interview. And, I went blank. See, I diverged to start talking about our interview. Terry, do you remember the point I was making?
Well, you were talking about Archangel Michael. And
Right. Okay. So, the Ra group. The Ra group is my take is the Ra group is very much connected to Jesus. That Jesus was a co-creation with the Ra group, and they were planning this for 1,000 years before Jesus was actually born. And, you know, they would manipulate things so that people would recognize Jesus. Somewhat in a similar way as what's happening with David Wilcock. If you look at it and you know David Wilcock is not even interested in presenting himself to the channel, but he is connected to the Ra group. And through Edgar Cayce, they said that he would return in 1998, live in Virginia Beach, and may be a liberator of the world. I'm pointing out to you how they manipulate things so that people will pay attention to someone. Because David was getting messages, and it was 1997, and this voice that was talking to him said that they wanted to like him to move to Virginia Beach, which is where Edgar Cayce Foundation was, and David moved to Virginia Beach in November of 1997, and he was fulfilling the prophecy. It said he would return in 1998, live in Virginia Beach, and maybe a liberator of the world. And then when he asked them if he was Cayce, they told him, "We'd like you to be not to be known as a health channeler or a past life channeler, but if you do your highest purpose, you would be a public figure and bring teachings to the masses." And now, remember, as far as I know, David and they had no knowledge at that point of this prediction of Edgar Cayce that said, "A return in 1998, live in Virginia Beach, and may be a liberator of the world." Okay, is David a liberator of the world now? I don't know. We'll see. Well, you know, he's certainly a teacher of the masses. And certainly the book that I wrote helped him reach that status. Another thing that was interesting about David Wilcock was that he had the same astrology chart as Edgar Casey, 5 personal planets, 1 chance in 260,000 that they'd have that same configuration. And I don't believe that's true for most people. Having been an astrologer, although I wasn't an astrologer of past lives and no one knows who they were, but I don't believe most people come back with the same configuration of personal planets. But I believe they arranged that on the other side because they wanted David to be recognized as Casey, to have the opportunity to be a public leader, okay? And so you can see how they work things. And we go back to Jesus, and I would hypothesize that for whatever degree the Ra group was involved in the Old Testament, and I think there was a myriad of people who were interpreted as God, lots of them, some of them positive, some of them negative. Why are there so many names of God in the Old Testament? Adonai, Jehovah, Yahweh, Allah, that's not the Old Testament, but, you know, Beelzebub, Baal, and then there's negative gods and positive gods and whatever. It's like, what really happened there? Where did all those gods come from? And who was positive and who wasn't? And nobody in the Old Testament was called Ra, so I don't know where Ra came in. But I would guess somewhere or another they came in and they were setting up prophecies to set with the idea of bringing in a Jesus. And I opened the show talking to Terry because I found an article where it was in the Gospel of Matthew, there were some things that the person was pointing out. I haven't studied this, but they spent a whole web page that they compiled, which I'll go back and look at more deeply, pointing out how there was some manipulation involved in the people around Jesus so he could fulfill the prophecies of the Old Testament, because there were prophecies about a Messiah or a king of the Jews or a new teacher or a rabbi or something that was making it different. And then Akhenaten was part of that. So they make big plans, and then they have to carry them out. And then the goal is to try to catch people's attention. You know, in my case, when they started talking to me, and then first there was DK, and then there was Terry, and I mean, I don't know. I don't know if I was supposed to do this. There were too many really wild synchronicities that just seemed like so edgy that either it happened or it didn't happen. And there were such tiny, small decisions on my part that caused the synchronicities. For example, when I met DK, I was living in L.A., and I was writing articles for this magazine. And there was a New Age conference, and I was living on next to nothing, making $150 a month for writing an article. And there were all these luminaries at this New Age conference in Monterey, and I convinced my editor, why don't I go to Monterey, and then I can interview 10 people, and then I would make $1,500 in one shot, which seemed like a huge amount of money at the time. And the thing about it is, even after she agreed, even after I got a press pass, I was so tentative about going because I had an old funky car. And I said, what if my car doesn't make it? I'll be stuck somewhere. I don't have any money to fix it. I'll have to hitchhike. I won't have a car. And I said, maybe I shouldn't go. This is too much of a risk. But I went. against all of my little voices telling me not to go. And who do I see when I walk into that room? This beautiful woman is staring at me. I look at her and I said, do you know me from somewhere? And she said, you remind me of a writer that I had a crush on. And of course, this was in 2002, and I was writing The Reincarnation of Edgar Casey. And so that was the beginning of DK, and the rest is history. But there were, you know, like, was it fated? I don't think so. It was in the trajectory of possibilities. But I had to push myself through my obstacles to drive my old car 400 miles and to do that. And you know what? My car actually broke down on the way back, and I think I abandoned it in Fremont, California. I don't know what I did. I can't remember now. Did I buy another car? Did I take a bus? I don't know. Probably did something. But I left my car in the back of some gas station and gave it to them. And, you know, it was those kinds of decisions that brought in the synchronicities that is allowing what we're doing to happen now. And if I didn't do that, this would not be happening. So I don't know if I was a product of a lot of manipulation on their side. I think it was more a product of me meeting someone that I had a long-time affiliation with, and then suddenly they saw this as an opportunity, and that I didn't understand it, but I had to keep paying attention to it, and then I could see the opportunity, and you guys can see the opportunity, and that what we're doing is just really, really, really unusual in this realm. But I don't think it was supposed to happen. I think it was just a possible trajectory, and that it took a lot of spontaneous, foolhardy, on the surface, decisions on my part for it to happen. And suddenly, we've contacted a very high level of, shall we say, part of the universe. And I think it's part of the universe that's outside of duality. And that it doesn't, you know, if you pay attention to our sources, there's absolutely no agenda on their part to be holier than thou. There's also never a patronizing of us. By patronizing, you know, they don't usually say anything like a lot of New Age people would say. Oh, you, imagine I'm talking to you, and I'm going to be a New Age channel, okay? Oh, you beautiful children of love and light, you are the hope for the world, and we gather together today to bring our hearts into unity, and on and on and on and on, you know. And not that that's wrong. It's not wrong. And that for many people, that may be their next thing to learn, how to respond to that kind of energy. And that it's not wrong that there's beings on the other side that are doing that. Because in this article, Cameron does not distinguish between those people who came into this realm from very high level and from beyond duality, and for other beings that are in this realm that are on a slower evolutionary path. And they have not come from beyond duality. They still have thousands of years of lessons, maybe hundreds of thousands, to learn in 3D before they're ready to go into 4D. And they're evolving. And there's a whole structure in place, some of it of the negative, to help those beings evolve. And duality is part of the pressure cooker that works, that causes people to evolve faster. And the Ra group has volunteered to stay in this, in these dimensions, higher than ours, but say, just on the edge of duality, or maybe into duality, but they stand out to help the universe. And many Elohim have come into this realm to help the evolution. One time I read this great article by Philip Dick. It says, if the higher realms of beings didn't come into the lower realms, knowing that they would forget who they were when they got here, knowing that they would end up getting screwed up by the negative and have to get out of it. And if they didn't do that, the lower realms would separate from the higher realms forever. And that would be it. And so against all odds, there's multi-millions of people on this planet that have done that. Many of you fitting that category. And then there's loads of people that, if they found us, they wished they would. I know that our work is waking up those beings. It's waking up those high starseed wanderers in this realm. They are like sleeping seeds that have been scattered all over the realm. And when they wake up, they suddenly have a sense of empowerment, a sense of a reason to be here, a sense of purpose. You know, on our Sunday calls, I believe this is correct. I believe that creating this direct liaison with the Elohim and receiving their energy on these calls is extremely powerful, and that it's very rare for someone to do that in such a direct way, particularly when they talk to us and they comment on it. And we have 5 minutes left. Terry, are you there? Earth to Terry, are you there?
Auntie Terry or Uncle Terry?
Auntie Terry.
I'm here.
Would they like to make a comment on all of this stuff before we sign off?
Okay.
Are you in the zone? Huh?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And have you've been listening, right? You didn't fall asleep while I was talking, right?
No, I was listening.
Okay. So let's bring them in, and we'll have a few minutes of their comments. Father, Mother, God, we ask for the presence of the light. Surround and protect everybody on this line, everyone on the internet, everyone on the replays, and any negativity be taken to the highest realms of light, transmuted for the highest good of all concerned. We see ourselves in the flow of energy radiating from the center of the universe, through the galaxies, through the Milky Way, through the solar system, through the outer energy fields of planet Earth, through our bodies, and into the center of the Earth. And right now, we invoke a group energy connection while maintaining the sovereign integrity of our souls, and we invite those sources that are positive, service to others, honoring the law of one, to join with us. We create a protected space that only the positive has access to. Anything not of that nature must leave now. We invite our sources to come present with us and make any comments on the topic of tonight's discussion.
We greet you in the love light of one infinite creator. It is the 2nd of June, 2014, and we welcome and greet each person on the line and are delighted to see and sense your presence here. We say that one of the things that is very important when you are listening to any child source or any higher archangel or being, angel, that may be offering their service to you, and that you resonate with their energies and you resonate with how they are posturing themselves, and that you open yourself to what resonates, and if something doesn't resonate, then discard it as not applicable to you. Archangel Michael and others do provide a service. They are not the same frequency as we are, but they do provide a very grounding service for individuals. In all of it, be sure to maintain your own determinism rather than to fall into letting another's or an angel or a being dominate your own self-determinism, as you are the master and source of the works that come from you and the creations that come from you, and your life in the manifest. This advice of maintaining your own center will be a stabilization for you and help guide you through a difficult life in a difficult third density. Thank you.
You know, one thing I would comment on is that because a being identifies itself a certain way, I mean, it's through channeling, there's no law in the universe that says that being has to be who they say they are. In other words, if a lower being suddenly said they were the Elohim, that could happen. Or anyone could say they're Archangel Michael or Jesus or so-and-so. Is that true?
They could, however, if one sticks to the tuning, to the frequency, and asks three times and notices the rapidity of the reply, then they can, during one encounter and over time, can determine whether this is a positive source or not. A negative source will take energy rather than give energy, and so there's a various signs that you can watch and see how you feel afterwards, how the advice supports you. Thank you.
There's a tendency that when somebody identifies themselves in an exalted way, that a human would like to believe that they are that. And so it's easy for a human to, on a subtle level, give up their power to that kind of identification. So this, I'm just reiterating this, to just be careful of your own discernment in all of this. Discernment is the key.
Yes.
Ultimately,
even if it is.